to protect your right to disagree with me. Because my family came here, and I've been raised since I was a baby, being told how special this country was and how special this state was. And my whole focus in supporting this bill and supporting the representative presenting this bill in his personal life experiences and his sacrifices that his family made, because I want to preserve what made this state and this country so special for a family like mine for generations to come.
That was Alex Andrade speaking on the floor of the legislature, the House of Representatives in Tallahassee last week on the Stop Woke Act, which then passed. It was a very interesting speech. I may play it in its entirety at a different time during the show. But I love hearing somebody, anybody, stand up for the principle that though I despise what you're saying, I will fight to the death to protect your right to say it, something that I used to take for granted all Americans believed in. I do not think you can take that for granted anymore. Alex Andrade is our state representative for District 2. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Hey,
thanks for the kind words.
You deserve it. I thought it was a very, very useful speech. Things that got done this week, obviously the big headline news, even making national news, has been the passage and sending the governor, if I'm not mistaken now, the ban on abortions past 15 weeks with an exception only for a medically certified problem with the child. Is that right?
I need to go back and look to see if exactly what the vote count was in the Senate, but I do believe it passed.
I got 23 to 15 H5 passed in the Senate yesterday.
Oh, wow. I guess some Democrats, I believe, walked on the bill or weren't able to be there to vote for it, but that's great news.
So, and the end result of this bill, and just because you and I have talked about this a few times, but for people who haven't maybe been tracking it, this goes into effect July 1st, I think, June 1st. But in either case, it's meant to be a way of aligning Florida law with what the Supreme Court is widely expected to do in its ruling on the Mississippi abortion restrictions, which is the same thing at 15 weeks, right?
Exactly, yes. So it was designed to match up. So if the Supreme Court came out with its ruling, Florida would already be in line with the constitutional interpretation of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, since we're in line with them, if Supreme Court surprises everybody and goes the other way, would that also invalidate our ordinance?
I'm being perfectly honest. Currently, that law would be considered unconstitutional under, you know, every legal interpretation, all the Roe v. Wade progeny that we have.
Right.
So there's going to be litigation on this, and there's likely going to be litigation on this at the state level. As you're aware, Florida has a heightened right to privacy than even the U.S. Constitution. We don't just have the Fourth Amendment right to privacy that every state in the country has. We have a right to be let alone. So our right to privacy is even stronger. Our case law at the state level is even stronger. So it's going to be a fight at the state level. But hopefully, you know, we do have a U.S. Supreme Court interpretation and judgment that, allows us to get there.
And by the way, just so people, if they're not clear, generally it's 24 weeks, which is just shy of 6 months now out of 9 months. This would be 15 weeks, is just shy of 4 months, not quite halfway into pregnancy. I think sometimes, you know, people who are familiar with all of this talk in weeks, but it's easier for the ordinary person to kind of understand months and, you know, what the role in gestational development would be and, you know, where a woman would be at in her pregnancy at that time. Other things that you guys have worked on this week was the protection for churches against emergency orders that would inhibit their ability to meet, right?
Yes. Representative Nick DeSigley presented that on the House floor the past few days. It essentially, is the result of what we saw, a pastor being arrested down in, I believe, Hillsborough or Pinellas County for meeting. Some of the arguments were kind of the dusted off kind of condescending arguments about, well, what if we have Ebola? Will these churches just be so suicidal that they'll meet?
I did happen to hear the Ebola comparison in the speeches. Yes.
The condescension, I'm very much looking forward to the day when we don't have condescending arguments like that related to COVID-19.
Yeah. And this is something I tried to say a lot when we talked about this issue is, you know, people with principles, they say on one side or the other, the situation with vaccines and masks or anything else that we're doing, we'd talk about this very differently if this was a highly lethal to everybody all the time versus if it were much more just like the ordinary cold. There's a whole spectrum of disease possibilities, and the where it falls on that spectrum is a huge part of the conversation about what's justified and, you know, what's not justified. There's some local bills that have also moved forward that are going to either pass or have passed already. You've got a firefighter pension. Is that Pensacola Fire? Is that the one that that's for?
Yeah, that's the bill that ratifies the agreement between the city and the Pensacola firefighters that says, you know, widows of firefighters get to keep their pension benefits if they remarry. And then we also had the ECUA local bill that was passed by Representative Saltzman, or presented by Representative Saltzman yesterday, I believe. I don't recall if we voted on it yet. We may be voting on it today. And then I also worked with Jerry Williamson to put the road designation for Bayfront Parkway on the road designation package to change the name of Bayfront Parkway to Fallen Heroes, Pensacola Police Fallen Heroes Highway at the request of the city.
Yeah, that's going to move forward as well, which is good to hear. You know, sometimes these are the small ones, but still good to hear. What, I forget, pardon my ignorance, what does the ECUA bill do that Michelle's running, Representative Saltzman?
It incorporates 8-year term limits. It provides some changes, I believe, to the employee references in the special act. I believe the component about changes to the sovereign immunity were pulled out, but you know it's pretty much always been known as the term limits bill.
The term limits bill, that's the key provision. All right, very good. I had asked you previously on the air about the hopefully the removal of the ban on ranked choice voting or instant runoff voting, a system that I absolutely adore as a political scientist, and I did not understand why the election reform package would contain that prohibition in it. You had said you would talk to the sponsor, a good friend of yours and future Speaker of the House, Danny Perez. Did you, and what did he say?
It has not come to the floor yet, so I haven't had the opportunity to talk to him about that.
Okay.
I've been a little bit waylaid with the transportation bill that we sent over to the Senate 2 days ago. So, Andrew, you have my commitment. I will talk to him today about
okay.
it.
Okay.
And coming from with it.
I'll take it. And I know you agree with me and you like that possibility of using that in certain circumstances. And, you know, I just hate to see it taken off the table unnecessarily unless there's some really good reason for it, which, of course, I can't imagine since I think that it's a really good provision. Last thing I wanted to ask you about is just related to FPL, PSC, net metering. There's a lot here to unpack and talk about. But are you seeing anything move in terms of more help or the possibility, you know, the city of Pensacola voted to send a letter to the PSC asking them to, you know, or they're going to vote next week on a letter to send to them to, you know, relook at these rates and this new rate structure. Are you seeing any motion on that front, or have you heard anything that might involve change for people who are suffering right now?
The net metering bill in the Florida House passed. I believe it's on special order today in the Florida Senate. I debated in support of that bill because it's one of the few ways that I can actually have a direct impact on reducing bills in the future for Northwest Florida. But those letters, the Public Service Commission can't unilaterally pull back its order. They're a 5-panel judge. It's on appeal with the Supreme Court. If FPL desires to come back and revise their rates, and the Public Service Commission agrees, they can have a whole new rate case review. But the hearings occurred all last summer. I don't believe we don't want our circuit court judges changing their orders in the face of public backlash 5 months after they've drafted an order or a verdict in a criminal trial. This is the exact same process. I've been diving in on different things like the inverted rate structure. I think that's been a big frustrating component for Northwest Florida. This is the first time we've had an inverted rate structure where you get charged more per kilowatt after the first 1,000.
Right.
We We do have that in some of our water utilities in Northwest Florida, but we've never had that for our electric bills. You know, I believe that, you know, bills have been going down. Complaints and concerns have been going down as the weather has changed. You know, but again, I mean, I've asked every single person who's come to me with concerns about their usage, you know, to one, provide me their full bill so I can compare kilowatts to the bill amount.
Right.
And two, provide me the last, you know, 3 to 5 years of usage to see if there's been any month where your usage has been the same amount or higher. I have seen, I believe at this point, maybe two that have never had usage as high. You know, the issue I keep trying to
so the takeaway there is that the FPL argument that usage is actually very high, based on the sort of limited exposure that you've had to the bills, that argument holds basically.
Yes.
Okay.
You know,
that doesn't necessarily justify the whole price, but if usage is up, that's at least part of the case that they're making to the public.
Yes, I mean, it would be very easy for me to pander to constituents right now, but that's not going to save my constituents money. If you are concerned about your power bills, the most direct way you can control it is by finding ways to reduce your usage.
Well, very good. I know a lot of people are looking, you know, they're looking for more of an answer. I think maybe, and it may be cat out of the bag at this point kind of stuff, but, you know, maybe a future-looking bill that puts a little bit higher level of requirement on utility companies to give advance warning to people of what their projected bills would be. Because that's the thing I keep thinking FPL failed to do so badly, is they just didn't give us a reasonable understanding of what was going to happen. And maybe we should have all been more diligent at following the numbers and doing the calculations, but, you know, more advance warning seems go ahead.
Andrew, we were the only part of the state that didn't have an inverted rate structure. And I think that hit people harder than anticipated.
Yeah, no, and clearly, you know, I mean, clearly that's been the big problem, is we weren't prepared for it. We didn't understand it. And again, people didn't have any idea that it was going to cost them as much as it had. So Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2, we're coming up toward the end of the session. One more week left, and we'll talk to you next Friday. Thank you, sir, for the time. I appreciate it, as always.
Thanks, Andrew.